Sri Chaitanya Manavistam Stapitam Jaina Bhutale Sayam Upakadam Ayam Dadati Sakundantikam Vanisha Kapadu Vischa Kupasani Vai Vaja Patita Vaja Pavanebio Vaisna Devyo Namanama. In the previous chapter, the previous chapter begins just after Krishna has placed Govardhan Hill down, and after saving the residents of Vrindavan from the devastating rainfall caused by Indra. And Krishna, in such an amazing way, saved them. Considering that Krishna is all powerful and all intelligent, there could have been hundreds and thousands of alternative ways. He could have stopped Indra so easily. He could have just changed Indra's heart. He could have just put his chakra in the air so no rain would have come. Oh, there's unlimited ways. He could have done so many things. He could have sent Indra thousands of miles away, billions of miles away. He could have changed Indra, as Brahma once did, or into a pig. You know that story? Yeah. Indra became a pig and became very happy in his pig life. He could have sent him within the stem of a lotus flower. That also happened to Indra one time after he had killed Twasta. But Krishna, in his pastimes, he saved the residents of Vrindavan in such a wonderful way that Indra learned his lesson just by watching the display of Krishna's opulence. And what did Krishna do? In a very sweet way, to be with the residents of Vrindavan continuously for 7 days, he turned Govardhan Hill into an umbrella. And with the umbrella of Govardhan Hill, held with the little finger of his left hand, Krishna stood there and created underneath Govardhan a wonderful valley filled with a perfect residential place for the residents of Vrindavan and their cows. And in this way, by Krishna protecting the residents of Vrindavan and simultaneously teaching Indra, Krishna was able to be with the residents of Vrindavan, the cows, the gopas, the gopis, the friends of Krishna, continuously engaging in pastimes, exchanging sweet, loving exchanges, continuously, day and night, 24 hours times 7. And in this way, the residents of Vrindavan's ecstasy increased, and Krishna's transcendental pleasure increased as well. So after Krishna had placed the hill down, everyone in Vrindavan was simply glorifying him. And the cowherd men, those elderly senior cowherd men, they approached Nanda Maharaj and asked him, "Who is this boy that you have? He's so wonderful. On one hand, he does incredibly, unlimitedly powerful things like lift Govardhan Hill. And on the other hand," and that makes us think that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. "And on the other hand, he's so naughty. He steals butter. He sometimes lies. He pinches the babies. He does so many naughty things. So how is it possible that such a naughty boy could be the all-powerful Ishwara, the Paramishwara, the Supreme Lord? And also, somehow we are so attracted to your boy. And somehow your boy, Krishna, is so attracted to us. Please tell us, who is this boy, this son of yours, this darling of Braja? And Nanda Maharaj then repeated all the words that Gaga-charja Gaga-muni had spoken about Krishna during the name-giving ceremony. And he explained, and Gaga-muni had explained, this boy, practically speaking, is like Narayan. He has appeared in different ages and different colors, and anyone who takes shelter of him, all difficulties, tirishyati, he conquers. He crosses over. Anyone who takes shelter of your boy, Gaga-muni had said, and Nanda Maharaj was repeating it, crosses over the ocean of material difficulties. And indeed, this is such important instructions for us on the Sattika platform. The residents of Vrindavan were on the Siddha platform, associating with Krishna. But even for those on the Sattika platform, this is the way to cross over the ocean of difficulties. And indeed, this material world is an ocean of difficulties. A vast, unlimitedly vast ocean of difficulties. And in our illusion, we're thinking to solve these difficulties in our little insignificant ways. And that's compared, whatever those ways to solve our problems, everyone, if you ask people privately, you know, if someone you have a relationship with, do you have any problems? They'll pull out their book, you know, with their long list. Yes. And how are we going to solve the problems? We have another book with all our plans and schemes how we're going to solve them. But we can take both books and throw them in the Indian Ocean and let them float all the way to Jagannath Puri. And because this is an ocean of difficulties, it is likened to trying to cross the ocean by holding on to the tail of a dog. Because dogs swim. Yes, they can swim. But their dog paddling in the ocean is so near to the shore, and we want to cross the ocean by holding on to their tail and by one dog power. No, it cannot be done like this. But yet, if we can somehow or another always take shelter of Krishna, Gaga-muni said, then the ocean of the material world can indeed be crossed over. So that was what Nanda Maharaj said, that all I can do, you're asking who my son is, I can just repeat the words of Gaga-muni. But although we may consider him like Narayan, or that the potency of Lord Narayan has entered into him, still I don't want you, senior members, who are like my boy's fathers, don't think of him as God. Please don't do that. Just keep bestowing your well wishes and your protective glances and your blessings upon him. That is my request. And then ultimately, at the end of the chapter, Nanda Maharaj or Sukadeva Goswami, the different acharyas explained it differently, summarized what had happened. And then the conclusion was, may he, Govinda, the lord of the cows and the destroyer of Indra's false pride, may he be pleased with us. And really, this is the essence or half the essence of a true prayer. It is meant to evoke the pleasure of the Supreme Lord, and the other half is the action that will indeed please him. We act to please him, and by that action, even if it is done in a very simple way, even if it is insignificant, and practically speaking, because we're all insignificant, that's all we can do is act insignificantly in our pleasure, like the little squirrel. Well, sometimes Prabhupada first told the story as a spider. When the great monkeys were throwing their big rocks and trees in the ocean to help build the bridge, Prabhupada told the story there was a spider who was flicking grains of sand. And they said, "Move out of the way. What are you doing? Look what we're doing. What is this throwing grains of sand going to help in building the bridge? Out of the way before we step on you." In our exuberance. And then as Prabhupada told the story, Lord Ram came and said, "No, their service is equal. His service is equal to yours." Because all anyone can do ultimately is insignificant service. But let whatever service we do, let it be for the pleasure of Krishna, to evoke the pleasure of Krishna. Not that we should specifically throw grains of sand if we have the capacity to toss big boulders. But ultimately, what Krishna notes is the sincerity of the devotional attempt. So after offering that prayer, then the next chapter, 27, begins. And now Indra is going to come because he's done something quite horrific and terrible. And what has he done? He's tried to kill all the residents of Vrindavan, including Krishna, including the cows, including the cowherd men, the cowherd ladies, the gopis, the sakas. He's tried to kill everyone due to the intoxication of his pride and the anger resulting from Krishna stopping the Indra puja, the Indra jagya, the sacrifice meant for him. And therefore, because of that, Indra tried to kill everyone. And then when Krishna lifted the hill, and no one at all was disturbed, even by the Samvataka, the universal destructive clouds that had the capacity to destroy the universe, fill it with water, and yet no one was disturbed, and everyone was enjoying life like they had never done before underneath the hill. And Indra had exhausted all his supplies. There's nothing left. He had an understanding, a glimpse of who he was dealing with here. So on one hand, he realized he made a mistake. On the other hand, he realized, this is very dangerous what I've done. If he can lift up a hill and stop my Samvataka cars, he can do anything he wants to me. So Indra decided the best course of action. And of course, he is a great devotee. The best course of action is if I apologize and I beg Krishna's forgiveness. So the first verse says, Sukadeva Goswami said, who's narrating this to Maharaj Prakriti, after Krishna had lifted Govardhan Hill and thus protected the inhabitants of Braja from the terrible rainfall, Sarabi, the mother of the cows, came from her planet to see Krishna. She was accompanied by Indra. So Sarabi Shakra Eva Cha. Sarabi and also Indra. Sarabi was going first because Krishna is Namo Brahmanya Devaya Go Brahmanya Itaya. So he had so much affection for the cows. It's just like if you want to meet someone who's very influential, if you go with someone who he has deep affection for, then his heart is melted. And while his heart is, that influential person's heart is melted, then when you see him, you immediately have a relationship with him, with such a person. So Sarabi was pushed forward, and Indra came. She came from her planet. Sarabi Sakra Eva Cha. Golokat, mean the planet of the cows she came from. Purport. The word Golokat here indicates the material planet called Golok, which is filled with exceptional cows. So Rabi went joyfully to see Lord Krishna, but Indra went fearfully. As indicated by this verse, Lord Krishna had to adopt extraordinary measures to protect his Vrindavan associates from Indra's obnoxious and offensive attack. Certainly Indra was ashamed and also nervous about his future. Having acted improperly, he had fearfully gone to seek the shelter of Lord Brahma, who then ordered him to take along Sarabi from the material Golok planet and go to see Indra. This purport is mainly from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, who explains that Indra could not take the Sarabi Paliantam. He couldn't take Sarabis from the Goloka to go with Krishna, because he has no access, being in the material world himself, even though an exalted demigod, he has no access to go to Goloka Vrindavan, what to speak of, to bring a cow from there. So this was a cow from the material world, but a very wonderful cow from a wonderful planet in the material world. Because Lord Brahma had suggested this, because Brahma had also offended Krishna previously, as we heard in chapter 13, and he had offered prayers to Krishna to beg for forgiveness, understanding that he had completely underestimated Krishna's unlimited power. He was trying to test it, and he had completely underestimated it. When he saw so many Narayans and universes, Vishnus expand from Krishna, etc. So Indra went to Lord Brahma, to an experienced person, to see how to deal with what he had done, offending Krishna in that way. And Lord Brahma said, you better apologize, and better to bring someone very dear to Krishna with you. You bring Sarabi with you. So therefore Indra came with Sarabi. Text 2. Indra was very ashamed of having offended the Lord. Vivikta Upasamgamya. He approached Upasamgamya. He approached Vikrita in a shamed way. Krita Helena. He had done an offense, the offense of Hela, neglecting his relationship with Krishna. And he went Vivikta in a solitary place. And this solitary place where he approached Krishna was just by the base of Govardhan Hill, because Krishna, as we'll read, that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur said, he was after he had put the hill down, he had gone around Govardhan Hill to inspect it, to see if there was any damage, because after all, Indra had thrown thunderbolt after thunderbolt, and Govardhan Hill, in its ecstasy being touched by the finger of Krishna, did not feel anything. But Krishna was going around Govardhan Hill to see if there had been any damage done. So that was one thing that Krishna was doing. Also, he was giving an opportunity to Brahma, to Indra, to meet him in a solitary place. So if Indra had wanted to apologize, he wouldn't have to do it publicly and suffer the humiliation of a public apology. The Lord allowed him to do it privately. So the purport here says, the specific solitary place where Indra approached Sri Krishna is mentioned by the sage Sri Vaishampayan in the Harivamsa, Vishnu Parva. Sadarsho pavishtam vai govardhana silatate. He saw him, Indra saw him, Krishna, sitting at the base of Govardhan Hill. From the commentaries of the Acharyas, we understand that Lord Krishna wanted to provide a solitary meeting for Indra so that he would not be further humiliated. Indra came to surrender and beg forgiveness, and the Lord allowed him to do so privately. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Srila Goswami is coming first. Vavikti means a solitary place. This place is specifically mentioned by Vaishampayan, and the quotation is there. This coming in a solitary place is understood that Indra, seeing that the Lord had gone off a distance because Krishna had gone to herd the cows, and therefore he gave the cowherd men an opportunity to speak about him, and it also gave then he wandered off from herding the cows with the boys to Govardhan Hill. So he wandered off from the cows and the boys off a distance, since he had gone far away from his friends on the pretext of collecting many flowers. It is also to be surmised that Lord Balaram on that day had not come for some reason or another. How wonderful is Goloka Vrindavan. The cows are there. The boys are there. Govardhan Hill is there. Lord Balaram is home on that day. And the atmosphere is so charged with the sweetness of everything in Vrindavan, just simply having one desire, and that is to offer Krishna some pleasure according to their capacity. Whatever they have, the trees, the land, the water, the grass, the boys, the girls, the ladies, the men, everyone, the deer, everyone is just simply interested in pleasing Krishna. One morning, Krishna went alone to see what extent the lightning bolts of Indra had broken the back of Govardhan. This gave Indra an opportunity to meet Krishna in a solitary place with Vavikta. The specific solitary place where Indra approached to Krishna is mentioned by Sage Vaishampayan. Indra saw Krishna sitting at the base of Govardhan Hill. Sarabi had sent Indra with a suggestion. Go alone without your elephant carrier, and in a humble mood offer obeisances at Krishna's lotus feet to get relief from your offense. Without your very noble, powerful Aravata, the elephant, you come on foot in a very humble way. By his glance, Krishna said, so Krishna looked at Indra when he came, and he said with his glance, with a look in his eye, he said, O king of the demigods, I see that you have unprecedented affection for me. You have come to show mercy to me, who have offended you by stopping your worship. So when Krishna indicated that to Indra, Indra became ashamed. Vidditaha. The third text. Indra had now heard of and seen the transcendental power of omnipotent Krishna, and his false pride in being the Lord of the three worlds was thus defeated. Holding his hands together in supplication, he addressed the Lord as follows. Srila Sridharaswami comments. Short comment. Of this, Sri Krishna, Sutan Anubhava means Anubhava, which also has also been heard of. Indra has now seen the potency of Krishna, about which he had previously only heard, and his intoxication, thinking that I am the Lord of the three worlds, was thus destroyed by getting a glimpse of Krishna's potency. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments on the third text. First, with his own eyes, Indra saw the powers of Krishna. Later, having understood his offense and desiring to alleviate it, Krishna went to Mount Meru, where he heard about Krishna's power from Lord Brahma. And how did Lord Brahma know? Because again, in the 13th chapter, Krishna had seen, Lord Brahma had come to, because he had stolen the boys and the cows, and he had seen that Krishna was there with the boys and cows, and there were unlimited boys. And suddenly these unlimited boys and unlimited cows turned into all four Vishnu forms. And all living entities were worshipping Vishnu, and Vishnu was covered from toe to head with tulsi plants, tulsi leaves. And all these Vishnu forms, these Narayan forms, were entering in and out of Krishna's transcendental body, this little cowherd boy. So Indra had gone to Brahma, and Brahma said, "You think you've seen something? Krishna lifting a hill with his left hand, you can only know what I had to see and how bad I felt. So I think it's time for you to, I think you should apologize." So here, now there's some prayers. Now Indra offers prayers to Krishna. And from text 4 to text 13, that's 10 verses, he offers prayers. This is the first one, and they're quite philosophical, but it's probably just to get a feel for the prayers and how Indra approaches it, because after all, he's a demigod, so he'll pray as a demigod, and to see what he's, to see the flow of what he's saying. Perhaps I'll read the prayers first and then read some of the comments. King Indra said, "Your transcendental form, a manifestation of pure goodness, is undisturbed by change." First quality, it doesn't change. It's transcendental. It's beyond the modes of material nature. It's Sudasattva. And it never changes. It is shining with knowledge. Another quality of Sudasattva. And devoid of passion and ignorance. So it is Shuddha. Sattva is pure goodness, transcendental goodness. "In you does not exist the mighty flow of the modes of material nature, which is based on illusion and ignorance." He understood who he was dealing with. The form of Krishna, Brahma had explained it to him. This is not a form. Just because it's a form, it doesn't mean that it's a form like we have a form. This is an unlimitedly powerful form. "How then could there exist in you the symptoms of an ignorant person, such as greed, lust, anger, and envy, which are produced by one's previous involvement in material existence, and which cause one to become further entangled in material existence?" Here we are, we who have forms, material forms, composed of goodness, passion, ignorance, different varieties of that. And what we suffer from now, what we are entrapped within now, is a product of our previous entanglement in material nature and previous deeds that we've done. There's no one who's innocent, an innocent victim. This is all born of previous activities. The very body we have is born of. Is it not one? Not two people have the same body? Or even if there are twins, there are so many differences. So the present indicates the past, and the present also dictates the future. So what a unique circumstance we are all in fact, that we can tell from the present what our strengths, what our weaknesses are, what our virtues are, what our vices are. We can tell how we've played with the material energy, trying to manipulate it in the past, and have become entangled in it in the past. This mixture of piety and impiety that every living entity has. And then by understanding that the present is a product of the past, we can understand that at the present, how we are acting is going to dictate the future. Now, this could be a very frightening thought. It should remain only a frightening thought. We should never think, anyway, I'm going to... I once knew this man in Bombay who... He was quite wealthy, very good person. And he actually thought that he was the most pious person in the whole world. He actually stated this. So even something good that we may have becomes the cause of so much entanglement, because pride comes and then you end up offending so many people, and etc., etc. What to speak of the bad things we do, have done, and do? A miserable future. So therefore, there's indication in this indirectly how careful a living entity has to be good and yet extremely humble. And to really be better than good, to be transcendental and act for the pleasure of Krishna, because any self-centered, selfish activity will entangle us further in the modes of material nature, which ultimately means danger and death. Danger because there is always a chance, no matter how pious we are, that we get implicated in horrible activities. So Indra is saying that your position is fully transcendental. Your body is shining with knowledge. You're not touched by any of the modes of material nature. And then in the last line in that verse, and yet as the Supreme Lord, you impose punishment to protect religious principles and curb down the wicked. So he's saying that previously I thought that you had stopped the Indra Jagya because you were envious of me, or greedy, or proud, which are all symptomatic of the modes of material nature. But now I see that your body is completely transcendental, and therefore your action was not impelled by the modes of material nature, but rather it was impelled to protect religious principles and curb down the wicked. Dvaniya bhavati bharata bhutanamadama syatatmanam sri jamyam pritranaya sadhanam vinasya chataskritam. So now I'm understanding something about who you are. You are the father and spiritual master of this entire universe, and also its supreme controller. And there Krishna is, having walked away from the cows and the boys, shoeless, in the dust of Braja, walking around, sitting at the base of Govardhan Hill, with his transcendental body, and Indra is saying that you are the supreme control. He recognizes Krishna's position. You are the father and spiritual master of the entire universe, and as the father and the spiritual master, you have the right, the duty, the obligation to chastise. So therefore you have chastised me in your own way. And you chastise every living entity. How? You have the right to, and how do you do it? Your insurmountable time. And you impose punishment upon the sinful for their own benefit. Punishment is for the benefit of the punished. It is not springing from any other desire born of Krishna. Difficulty means punishment. Suffering means punishment. If we examine the events of our past, in this life, we're capable of doing that. The difficult ones, the suffering, this comes from previous life. And Krishna is showing us something. He's teaching us. He's punishing us. Don't become implicated in the material world. Don't try to squeeze enjoyment from the material world. You should follow the injunctions that I have given. And anything other than that is adharma. It is sinful. For your benefit. Indeed, Indra continues, in your various incarnations, selected by your own free will, You act decisively to remove the false pride of those who presume themselves masters of this world. Who is so presumptuous to think that they are a master of this material world? Is it only the big controllers of planets and big, big wealthy people? No, everyone. This is how everyone thinks. I'm the master. We may have little segments that we're master of, like the dog in his little yard barking at everyone. I'm the master of this yard, and if you come anywhere near my yard, even crossing outside the fence, I shall bark at you because you have... What is it? Yeah. And in Vrindavan, you really see this, where the dogs all have their little neighborhoods and have groups of dogs in their neighborhoods. And if any intruder dog crosses the line of their neighborhood, you've intruded. I am the lord of this neighborhood. And they drive them out. So this is the point of the material world is we try our best to lord it over it and we're crushed. That means our activities are crushed, means our pride is crushed. And of course there are other steps, but that is the first step to become a little bit humbled. And the material world, that is something we can be sure of. The material world, it shall humble us. It will humble us. It must humble us. Whether our consciousness becomes humble, it's another thing. But we will be humbled by the material world. And so it continues. Even fools like me, who proudly think themselves universal lords. Well, how should have Indra have thought? After all, he's the Indra. He's the king of the demigods. How should he have thought? He wields the Vajra, the thunderbolt. He has a court. So many people come to him. He benedicts. He controls. He sees everything. How should he have thought? And how should he have thought? And that is, I'm a servant only. I'm a servant of Krishna, and if one has that pure consciousness, one can wield unlimited power. Krishna can wield unlimited power through one, and one will not be touched. One will not be touched by the material energy whatsoever. Devi Eshukunamayi Mama Mayam Dhati Amamevate Papadinte Mayam Etan Tanantite. No touch. So even fools like me, who proudly think themselves universal lords, quickly give up their conceit and directly take to the path of the spiritually progressive when they see that you are fearless even in the face of time. While I was showering my rain upon you in torrents that were as thick as pillars, you were fearless. Time, difficulties come in varieties, many kinds, but they are all ultimately product and pushed by time. And you are fearless. Time is one of your energies, the kala roop, as Krishna is called in the 11th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. There's the visharoop and the kala roop. Kalosmin lokachaya krit. I am time. That is who I am. This is my shakti. You are fearless even in the face of time. Thus you punish the mischievous only to instruct them, to crush their pride, to make them understand that we are not universal controllers. We're not even little controllers. We are insignificant, teeny servants of the Supreme Lord. Engrossed in pride over my ruling power, ignorant of your majesty, I offended you, O Lord. May you forgive me. My intelligence was bewildered, but let my consciousness never again be so impure. This was his prayer. I'll read the purport here. Although Lord Krishna protected the residents of Braja by lifting Govardhan Hill, he had not yet punished Indra himself, and Indra feared that at any moment Sri Krishna might call the son of Vivaswan, Yamaraj, who punishes impudent persons who defy the law of God. Indra was quite fearful and thus begged the Lord's forgiveness on the plea that he could be purified only by Krishna's mercy, that he too was too stubborn to learn a good lesson through more punishment. In fact, despite Indra's humility, so he's asked, may you forgive me, let this not happen to me again by your mercy, please be merciful. In fact, the purport continues, despite Indra's humility in this case, his heart was not completely purified because he wasn't, part of his mood of his begging supplication from Krishna and submitting was fear. Fear of what will happen to me. So as long as me is in the center, it's not true and pure consciousness. Because pure consciousness, true consciousness, is that our very nature is servant of Krishna. Krishna is in the center. And we see from the mood of the gopis and the residents of Vrindavan, they had no self-centeredness whatsoever. Their only concern was how to please Krishna. So Indra still had some self-centered contamination. And even though at this particular point it wasn't manifesting because he had been humbled, his false ego had not been completely removed because he hasn't been fully established in his real ego. So therefore, he hadn't been completely purified. And the purport continues. Later on in this canto, we find that when Lord Krishna took a parijata flower from Indra's kingdom, poor Indra again reacted violently against the Supreme Personality of God, and he wouldn't give it to him. He took the tree, a parijata tree with Satyabhama, when he gave back the Aditi's earrings. And Indra said, no, you can't have it. And they fought. And who won? Krishna, of course. So despite this occurrence, Indra later on falls into a similar mistake. Thus, we should aspire to go back to our eternal home, the kingdom of Krishna, and should not become entangled in the imperfect life of the material gods. So he says, let my consciousness never again be impure. You descend into this world, O transcendental Lord, to destroy the warlords who burden the earth and create many terrible disturbances. O Lord, you simultaneously act for the welfare of those who faithfully serve your lotus feet. So he's hoping that there's two kinds of souls in this world. He's saying there's the demons and the devotees. Please, he's saying, include me in the category of your devotee, even though I may not be of the highest quality. But at least see me in that light, because I am I'm administrating on your behalf in the universe. So then in the next two verses, he offers obeisances after saying that. Obeisances unto you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the great soul, who are all pervading, who reside in the hearts of all. My obeisances unto you, Krishna, the chief of the Yadu dynasty. Unto him who assumes transcendental bodies according to the desires of his devotees. Unto him whose form is itself pure consciousness. Unto him who is everything, who is the seed of everything, who is the soul of all creatures. Unto him I offer my obeisances. My dear Lord, when my sacrifice was disrupted, I became fiercely angry because of false pride. And interestingly enough, that Indra had previously, practically speaking, was saying that, look how proud Krishna is. He's a talkative boy, little boy. and he's stopping my sacrifice? So who is the one who is actually proud? Who is injured? And after pride comes anger. And the opposite of pride is humility. And what is born out of humility? Tolerance. Tolerance and anger do not exist together. Pride and humility don't exist together. So because of the anger of my false pride, I tried to destroy your cowherd community with severe rain and wind. And O Lord, you have shown mercy to me by shattering my false pride and defeating my attempts to punish Vrindavan. To you, the Supreme Lord, spiritual master and supreme soul, I have now come for shelter. So quite wonderful prayers. Let's just go back. So he's asking for forgiveness in a very humble way. See if there, we'll read some of the comments here. First, Indra had said, if you remember, that he was glorifying Krishna's transcendental body as being beyond the modes of material nature. He was explaining this, showing that the pride, or there wasn't any greed or envy, which are born of passion and ignorance. These could not exist in Krishna. So that was not at all his motivation for stopping the Indra Yagya. Rather, his motivation was to help Indra by crushing his pride. And indeed, he had done that. So in Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments on the fourth text. You know that I was so foolish that I stopped your worship, and on the pretext of worshipping Govardhan, I enjoyed the... Oh, this is what Krishna is saying. You know that I was so foolish that I stopped your worship, and on the pretext of worshipping Govardhan, I enjoyed the offerings meant for you. Fearing such words from Krishna, Indra said, O Lord, though I am bewildered by your maya, I now know a little about you by a speck of your mercy. That is the intention of this and the next verse. Your transcendental form is undisturbed and ever peaceful. It is full of pure knowledge. Does it arise from sattva-gun? No. Your form is Vishuddha sattva, transcendental goodness, chidananda maya. Therefore, you are totally free from the modes of passion and ignorance. Moreover, people can destroy the effects of passion and ignorance. This is an important point, because in Kali Yuga we suffer so much. They are very heavy taskmasters, the modes of passion and ignorance. And the result of passion is distress. The stress is caused by passion. And the result of ignorance is deeper ignorance, deeper covering. People, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains the mind of Indra from this verse, people can destroy the effects of passion and ignorance simply by remembering your beautiful transcendental form. Though you are not the least bit influenced by the modes of nature like the conditioned soul, sometimes for amusement you accept a role in this world. Someone may object, but isn't that a fault? No, it is not a fault, because you have no desire to accept any relationship with the material realm. In fact, you are completely transcendental. Even though you appear to be in the material world, you are not of the material world at all. Let's see if we can read another. Seven. Even fools like me, Indra says, who proudly think themselves universal lords, quickly give up their conceit and directly take to the path of spiritually progressive. When? How? What impels them to take to the path? When they see that you are fearless, even in the face of time. Thus you punish the mischievous only to instruct them. So Indra has seen Krishna Chakravarti Thakur comments. Amongst those who think themselves Lord, I am the lowest. Indra speaks in this mood. Madhvidhagya indicates that Indra is the most foolish of the foolish. The comparison indicates the extreme, as in the example of a face as beautiful as the moon. The moon indicates the most beautiful. Indra continued, seeing that you are fearless in the face of time, I give up my false identity as a controller, because one can only be fearless when one controls everything, including time. Otherwise, there must be fear. So seeing that you are fearless in the face of time, I give up my false identity as a controller. Well, the meaning can be, not knowing what kind of punishment I will get, I give up my false identity out of fear of you. Giving up our pride, we fully take to the path of your devotees. Therefore, this pastime of lifting Govardhan is your punishment for me. And then the next verse. Indra says, engrossed in pride over my ruling power, ignorant of your majesty, I offended you, O Lord. May you forgive me. My intelligence was bewildered, but let my consciousness never again be so impure. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments here. Krishna might have replied, I lifted Govardhan Hill to protect Praja, not to punish you. Now I will call Yamaraj and arrange for your punishment. Afraid of such a reply, Indra fearfully said, as the most famous father and guru, you are merciful by nature. Therefore, please forgive the offense of this foolish person immersed in pride and ignorance of your majesty. You should not purify me by punishment, because I am like a stubborn animal. The moment after the master beats the animal, it again commits the same offense. Instead, you should purify me by your mercy so that my animalistic tendencies do not arise again. These prayers of Indra's and the prayers of all the great devotees, they are something that we can hold on to, like the person riding on his bicycle holding on to the bus or the truck. You have seen? You have not seen in Perth, though.
No.
It is quite illegal. You will see policemen if you try that here. But if we hold on to the prayers like this, and what it means to hold on, it means to enter into deeply into their mood, and then speak in their mood, then we go faster, because we're not limited to our own capacity. So instead, purify me by your mercy so that my animalistic tendencies do not arise again. Vishwanath continues by saying, this prayer is not offered with a completely pure heart, because Indra is exhibiting humility in order to save himself, because he doesn't want to be punished. Indra mentions this in the 7th verse. Later in the 10th canto, we find that when Sri Krishna once took a parijata flower from heaven, foolish Indra again reacted violently against the Lord. Text 9. You descend into this world, O transcendental Lord, to destroy the warlords who burden the earth and create many terrible disturbances. O Lord, you simultaneously act for the welfare of those who faithfully serve your lotus feet. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments. He said, you have appeared in this world for our benefit because of our prayers. Even knowing this, I have been blind and acted foolishly. Now, having been punished, I can see the truth. You have descended to destroy the demonic warlords who harass the earth and to bring prosperity to those who faithfully serve your lotus feet. But I am neither of those. You neither destroy me nor bless me. Alas, it is my great misfortune that you remain neutral towards me. 10. He offers obeisances in 10 and 11. This explanation, Vishnu offers explanations of what each verse means. And then in 12, my dear Lord, Indra says, when my sacrifice was disrupted, I became fiercely angry because of false pride. Thus I tried to destroy your coward community with severe rain and wind. Vishwanath comments, oh Indra, I can understand from your recitation of praises that you are my devotee. But without your sanction, the wicked Samvartaka clouds attack my vraja. Therefore, you should punish them. Fearing such an innocent scolding from Krishna, Indra thought, alas, I cannot be duplicitous with the all-knowing Supersoul. Therefore, in this verse, Indra decides to confess that everything was his fault. Krishna and Indra might have had the following conversation. Krishna says, but Indra, how is it possible for my devotee to do this? Indra, I became angry when my worship was stopped. Krishna, though I am your master and I stopped your worship, I cannot believe that my servant would do such a thing. Indra, anything is possible for one who is falsely proud. Krishna, though pride may somehow arise in my devotee, he will remove it with intelligence. Indra, but intense anger destroys all one's intelligence. So these are his comments on all the different words in the verse. And then the final verse, verse 13. O Lord, you have shown mercy to me by shattering my false pride and defeating my attempt to punish Vrindavan. To you, the Supreme Lord, spiritual master and supreme soul, I have now come for shelter. And the comment of Vishwanath. Indra said, though I have caused great disturbance to Braja, I have received your mercy like a sick person being diagnosed and given medicine by a doctor. Thus cured of my disease, I have given up the urge to release my lightning bolts. Because you control everything, you are the Supreme Lord. Because you give benefit to everyone, you are the spiritual master. Because you are the supreme object of love, you are the supreme soul. And thus Indra ends his prayers. And now, if Krishna allows, tomorrow we shall hear the reply of Krishna to the prayers of Indra. And then we shall hear Sarabi's prayers. And Krishna will finish the chapter. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srimad Prabhupada ki jai. Or Bhakti Pandita.